Good evening, everyone. Hello and welcome to the Cure Panel Talk Show. I'm Priya Menon, Scientific Media Editor of the Cure Talk blog. And I welcome all of you this evening to a discussion on diet and myeloma in our talk series on cancer and nutrition. Cure Panel Talk Show is now a featured host on Blog Talk Radio, and our shows have recorded over 114 listens. This is the 29th episode of Cure Panel Talk Show, and the second time we are discussing cancer and nutrition on this platform. It is with immense pleasure that I welcome today's expert, Danny S. Parker, to the show. Danny Parker is a research scientist with the University of Central Florida, where he studies low-energy homes under contract to the U.S. Department of Energy. He is also an author and has varied interests in many areas. He underwent a stem cell transplant in January 2011 and has been in remission since. Given a lifelong dedication to research, Danny now studies a myeloma and seeks to find ways to help himself and others to a happy and productive life. Danny, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Priya, I'm honored to be able to speak to you today about this important topic.
Thank you so much, Danny. The co-host of today's show is Pat Killingsworth. And Pat, I don't think, needs any introduction among the myeloma community. Pat has authored 4 books on myeloma and has 2 popular blogs where he writes about myeloma and cancer. Welcome to the show, Pat. We have an international panel of experts and patients joining us. Nancy Shamana is joining us from Canada. Nancy is a 4-year myeloma survivor and is currently in remission. She writes a column about her experiences for the Myeloma Beacon. We have Gary Peterson, co-host of our Cure Panel shows on myeloma, editor of MyelomaSurvival.com, joining us from Florida. And we have Dr. Smriti Parekh, a nutritionist and dietitian at NutritionRank.com, who will be joining us from India very shortly. I welcome all the panelists to the show today. I would like to remind our audience that we will be taking in live questions at the end of the discussion. And if you like to ask a question, please press a 1 on your keypads and we will bring you live on air to ask your question. I will now bring Pat in air to introduce the topic of today's discussion. Pat, you're live.
Hello, Priya. Hi, Danny. And,
hi, Pat.
And fellow panelists.
Hi there, Pat.
Hi, Pat.
Good. I'm excited to be doing this, here in the United States on a holiday, Labor Day. This is a very important topic. I just completed a 4-part series, a lot of it based on Danny's work, about just on what not to do if you're a myeloma patient, what not to eat, what supplements not to use. So it's a very broad topic, and I've read some of your questions ahead of time, and I think this is going to be a valuable experience. Diet and myeloma is a hot topic. Ever since Dr. Duri, the head of the IMF, came out and conceded or made a pronouncement that myeloma and diet were not exclusive and there is a relationship and they're interconnected up until recently. And a lot of physicians, if you speak to them now, myeloma experts, they'll say eat whatever you want. It doesn't really make a difference. It doesn't affect how your myeloma will react or how well that you'll do. And I think we're learning that that just isn't the case. So this should be a valuable hour, and I don't want to take any more time. So Danny, why don't you give us an overview, maybe 5 or 10 minutes, about some of the things that you've researched and some of the conclusions that you've come to.
Thanks, Pat. So I'm not a nutritionist, I should say that first, and nor am I a myeloma expert, although having studied the disease now for several years, I know a lot about it, and having looked at nutrition and myeloma for couple of years now. I've learned a lot about that too. But since I do work in the sciences, I'm just a researcher by training, and so I think whatever I'm doing, I'm interested in learning about it. And since, you know, this is a very important topic in terms of whether we can improve our chances to stick around longer through diet, then I've been researching this just the way I would research something else. And it turns out that there actually is a good amount of information on this topic. And of course, you've been generous enough to allow me to publish these various things in your column over the last couple of years. But yes, it turns out that researchers at the National Cancer Institute and other places have studied relationships between what people eat and their likelihood of developing myeloma, and that has provided some information on what looks like might be helpful and some things that look like they might not be helpful. And so within my work, I've tried to find out, you know, what are the things that in one study after another, and I'm talking about studies done by reputable medical organizations where you actually have important statistics attached to the investigation. But what can we learn from those? And it turns out that you can learn quite a bit.
Danny, can you hear me?
Yes. I can hear you.
Danny, I think we lost you for some time there.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
We'll try again. So are you hearing me now?
Yes, I can hear you. I would like to just just tell all the panelists and the experts, I think Blog Talk Radio has been experiencing some audio difficulties of this kind where we go off air sometimes, and I've been reading about this issue with them for some last 1 week. So in case that happens, I will just let you know.
Okay. Well, thank you.
And Priya, just to reassure you, I heard him. I haven't lost.
Okay, fine. Then maybe it was
sure.
Just me that I didn't hear him for some time. So.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Pat. Yeah.
Go ahead,
well,
Danny.
Anyway, so I guess you end up within these studies finding, you know, what looks like that what things might look like that they're helpful relative to myeloma. And one of the things I guess I would try to leave with listeners right at the very beginning is I think that it's useful to find out what things look to be helpful and try to emphasize those within diet, because often myeloma patients are older and their preferences for food are fairly set. But it would be useful to know what things would be really important to emphasize within the diet. And there are things, it turns out, and they're quite wonderful things to eat. And then the other aspect would be, what can we learn from research that looks like things that look like they would be unhelpful relative to diet? And there turns out to be some evidence in that regard, too. And so, you know, I hope that we can cover a little bit of those over the hour. And I also have sent Priya a kind of a distillation of the various columns I've written to Pat for his blog over the last couple of years, as well as the summary. And the summary is pretty important because that has all the information that I have in one place, except for perhaps one thing. Then in the other columns, it provides why do I believe this is true and why does it appear that this is so, that is the medical evidence for these things. And so anyway, that's really what I've done. And so within my own diet, what I've done is I've adapted so that the things that look beneficial relative to diet and myeloma, I emphasize those things in my diet, and I try to eat something from something beneficial in each meal. And then the things that are not good, I don't completely eliminate them because some of them are things I love, but I do limit them. I make it so that they're not emphasized, or in some cases, I might eliminate them entirely. For instance, I seldom have asparagus anymore. I try to limit ice cream and heavy cream products and so forth. So, but I also emphasize berries, raspberries, try to eat more fish and so forth. And then also the cruciferous vegetables. They're very important for cancer patients, not only myeloma patients, like broccoli, radishes, cabbage, cauliflower, and one of my new favorites, watercress, which is really quite marvelous in a lot of foods. So I'll turn it back over to see what Priya or Pat might want to ask me. That gives me some ideas about the way I've looked at this and what I've been doing, and then the information is out there for those that are curious about it. I can go over the specific items if that would seem to be appropriate.
Thanks, Danny. We've got a long list of questions here.
Yes, we do.
And this is good. We'll address those and get you off the spot a little bit. And I think you're being modest, by the way. I don't know anyone that knows more about how myeloma and diet, the relationship between myeloma and diet than Danny Parker. So I'm excited to have you here to help Danny. And I'll start off, and I just have a single question. Obviously, there are foods, and then there are supplements. Looking at the supplement side, if you were to supplement your diet with one thing, what would that be?
It would probably be curcumin, because there's a fair amount of evidence that curcumin not only helps conventional myeloma therapies like the immunosuppressing drugs like thalidomide, Revlimid, and so forth, but also the proteasome inhibitors like carfilzomib or bortezomib. So curcumin looks to be a pretty good one, but, that said, I think, some fairly conventional things. The vitamin D3 is very important for myeloma patients and is often deficient. So, if you had said, well, what is a single one that you'd least like to give up, I would probably say that, but certainly supplements are supplements. A good diet would provide you the foundation for your health, not only within myeloma, but the health of your body. And, each person takes in several pounds or kilograms of food every day. And this a complex chemistry. So the things we eat are quite complicated, chemical compounds. And so we know that a drug like lenalidomide, Revlimid, is powerful, but, also that's an angiogenic agent. That is, it prevents the growth of new blood vessels. But something like curcumin actually is an anti-angiogenic agent, too, as is something like blueberries. So blueberries, raspberries, grapes, asahi, rhubarb, all these contain compounds that are anti-angiogenic that are potentially, I'm not saying they're a substitute for Revlimid, but, they can help salt your chances is the way I look at it.
Wonderful. Thank you. Let's go north of the border and bring Nancy in. And Nancy, it's a holiday in Canada, too, today, isn't it? Enlighten us.
Yeah, it's also Labor Day here. And we had a nice long weekend, and I was gardening this morning, and now I'm having the pleasure of being on this program, so thanks for inviting me. Yeah.
It's nice to hear you, Nancy, after seeing you, your name and your writing for a long time.
Oh, yes.
Really nice to
yes,
hear
I think
your
I'm
voice.
Far too verbose sometimes, but, I get asked to write things, so I do, but I must say, over at the Beacon, I have a very good editor, and she really, she really edits what I write, and so maybe it's just half of what I write that shows up there, so that's fine too. But Danny, I just wanted to say my husband Dilip and I tried your seaweed miso soup last winter. It was a recipe from Pat's blog.
Right.
And it was very good. It took me a while to find the ingredients, so I did find them in a Japanese grocery store. And I'm still using up the dried shiitake mushrooms in cooking. They're very delicious.
Yes.
So one sort of generalized question I had was, how have you changed your diet since your diagnosis? And what are your favorite foods now? And maybe you've already mentioned what your favorite foods are now, but if you have any more thoughts on that.
Well, you know, that's really a great question, I think. I have changed the foods that I emphasize in my diet, and I've learned to really appreciate some that I didn't, that I'd kind of forgotten about. And I eat a lot of apples now. I eat a lot of blueberries now. In fact, I was making dinner before I came to the call. So I, you know, what's for dinner? That's always a useful thing to ask relative to that. So I made some salmon cakes, and they had some parsley, chopped parsley into the salmon. It was red sockeye salmon, and it turns out that protein consumption is important for us. And fish, in repeated studies, looks like especially oily fish like salmon or mackerel or sardines and so forth, they look to be useful for us. So I try to emphasize those. I've increased those. I've increased the amount of parsley I have in my diet. I've decreased some things that I love, like I do love ice cream. But it doesn't look so good for me. And I do love butter, it doesn't look so good for me. So, you know, I've decreased the amount of that stuff that I have. One thing that I've done that I'd like to share with others is at the meal, try to make sure that you're starting with whatever you feel like is useful. And then if you're going to have some of the things that you think aren't so good, then have less of them and have it later. That way you've got it kind of early in. But it's kind of like what you would expect. Like I didn't drink diet sodas much before, but I gave up on those entirely. They look to be, there's, you know, as you know, Nancy, there's accumulating evidence that they're not good for us. So it's like the old Bing Crosby tune. That's what you need to remember, which is accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative. Don't mess with the in between is what he said. I don't know what he meant by that. But anyway, accentuate the positive and eliminate or limit the negative. And that's pretty much what I've done.
Well, that's great. And I have to say, sockeye salmon is about the best tasting salmon, I think. You know, it's just really great.
Yeah, it's tasty. Yeah. And then with that, we're having a salad that's got a lot of watercress in it. I cut some grapes, and so I've got grapes, some chopped apples, and then there's, like I said, some parsley that's mixed in with the salmon cakes themselves. So anyway, that just shows an illustration of what I'm doing. And of course, each person, I think, patient needs to adapt within their own diet to find out, you know, what are the foods I love. And how can I adapt them so that they would be helped by what I know now about diet? And then maybe I can explore some new foods, like you mentioned, the miso soup with konbu, which is kelp, essentially, that grows in the ocean. It contains a compound called fucoidan that has pretty strong demonstrated anti-myeloma properties. And, you know, I've not met a doctor yet who said, don't eat that. So, you know, they will say, don't take a supplement. If you say, I want to take a supplement, they'll say, oh, don't do that, maybe. But, you know, if you're just saying, I'm going to eat miso soup, then no one's going to say, don't do that. So, anyway, yeah, I experiment with some new things, but I try to accentuate the positive relative to certain things. And, yeah, on things that are not so good for me, I have gone back on those. And those include a lot of fried foods, for instance. A lot of baked goods, a lot of sugar. It doesn't mean that I don't have cake, but it does mean that I'm having less of it. But, you know, I sure enjoy it. So,
yes, you'd savor it all the more if it's just
that's right.
There.
That's right. So, anyway. Yeah.
Well, that's
thanks,
great.
Thanks, Nancy.
Yeah.
Thanks, Danny. Let's give everybody a shot, Nancy. What do you think? And we'll hopefully double back and we'll get to your last two questions if we can.
I apologize, Nancy, for not being complete. So,
Gary, are you with us? Maybe he's not. Is there anybody heard from Gary?
Don't think I heard Gary.
More time for us.
Well, I guess.
There you go, Nancy.
Oh, okay. Well, while we're waiting for Gary, then.
Yeah, so let's get back to the questions I didn't answer.
Here's Priya.
Gary is on air, actually. Gary, you're live? Can you hear us?
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Yes, Gary. You
okay.
Are
you know what? When you push the mute button, you got to push it again.
Oh.
To speak, don't you? Is that how that works?
It appears so. Now we can hear you.
Sorry about that. Yep. I was so enamored with Nancy and her a Canadian accent, I guess.
But your voice sounds pretty good, too.
Kind of you.
Well, that's my northern Wisconsin accent, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Anyway, Danny, I grew to love you as soon as you said that asparagus wasn't good for me. As I was growing up as a kid, I kept on telling my mother, I hate this junk.
Now, I bet you're one of those guys who said Brussels sprouts are terrible, too.
I could deal with Brussels sprouts, I guess.
Okay, those are actually good for us. They're part of the cruciferous vegetable family. And I actually really like asparagus, but it contains L-asparagine, which there's some studies showing that it helps myeloma cells proliferate and survive. And basically, my look at myeloma is like toss it an anchor. You know, anything that's helping it survive, I'm not interested in providing. So I've pretty much given up on asparagus in my diet, and it's kind of sad. I like it, but anyway, go ahead.
I grew to like it over time, but when I was a kid, I thought it tasted terrible. One of the things I was wondering is, I understand that refined sugar is like a huge no-no for myeloma patients. But then I was wondering, there's this thing called turbinado sugar, and of course honey, and a new thing I think that you see on the grocery stores is called, it's agave nectar.
Yes.
And I was wondering if those are okay or better, and if they're not, you know, is there any sugar substitute that is okay?
Well, this is a kind of an unfortunate subject because I like sweet things, and you know that's been hard. It's not that sugar is really terrible for us. It's that, but when we're on dex, we're taking dexamethasone or prednisone or steroids, it is really bad for us then because we can end up in high glucose that can lead to type 2 diabetes, and we don't want to go there. But everyone likes to talk about how glucose is a growth factor for cancer, but it's also glucose is used for all for body functions to grow everything, and so it's the way we create energy for our muscles and for all activity. So, but that said, what we would a myeloma patient would really like would be have a very stable blood sugar, so that it doesn't change a whole lot through the day. So what does that mean? That means probably donuts in the morning would probably be the biggest disaster you could imagine, because it'll send your glucose skyrocketing, and then plummet. You know, you probably get some insulin shock from all the sugar. And so basically, it's probably if you're going to have sugar. My recommendation is that you have it towards the end of the meal or after a lot of protein loading or other stuff like that's already in your gut, so that it digests slowly rather than causing, you know, this very peaky type of movements. In terms of the type of sugar, the more complex the sugar, the better. That means that for instance, like I have breakfast cereal now, and I'll rather than add sugar to it, I generally won't do that. I'll add blueberries to it. I might add a little honey or something like that, but I just try to reduce the amount of sugar that I'm using in general. Now, if I'm going to have something that's really sweet, then I might have some of it, but I won't have a lot of it. And there are certain types of it that I just give up on entirely. And that is, we went out the other night, and the kids wanted sushi, which is fine because, you know, fish is good for me, but at the end of the meal, the waitresses showed up with cotton candy and said, "Would you like one?" I said, "Absolutely not." So this is not good for us. And so, yeah, the more complex the sugar, the better. I would say probably the turbinados or the agave might be better, but sugar, you know, it's all kind of the same thing. It's just how
it is.
Mm-hmm. It's you know, if you don't have it on an empty stomach. That would probably be the very best advice. Have it at the end of a bigger meal. You know, and like if you're in the difficult time for me is in the afternoon when I want a pick me up or something like that, and then I want sugar. So I try to have like an apple with some peanut butter, or you know, a slice of apples, or maybe some nuts with raisins, something like that. Advice for you.
So myeloma patients shouldn't cheer now that Twinkies are back?
Well, they can cheer about them. I don't recommend that they eat them very often, though. Relative to all these things, on the column, people must think I'm really quite a prude in terms of my eating, but I eat just about anything. And I do eat even some of the stuff that I say is probably not good to have, but I don't have very much of it. And, you know, so I think mindful eating is important. So you're aware, like, okay, I'm going to eat a piece of donut, which would be a really terrible thing, but I'm having a piece. I'm not having a donut. Or if I'm doing this, I'm not doing it every morning. Or, you know, this sort of thing. So you're actually thinking more about what am I putting in my mouth, you know, this sort of thing. And how does that fit relative to what I know might be helpful with myeloma?
I guess it all makes sense. I guess I'm far, far more cognizant of the things that I put in my mouth, you know, and like processed foods, you know. You look at a label and it has, you know, 55 different things on it, each one, because you're a chemist, you know, each one. And as we know, just like Dex helps Revlimid, like each one probably has some kind of interaction. No telling what you're doing to yourself.
We can't know. I mean, it's way too complicated. The doctors can't know. It's really complicated. So, you know, Dr. Durie has one really great piece of advice, and I think it comes from Michael Pollan's book, Food Rules. But anyway, it is when you go shopping at the grocery store, shop at the edges. And that's where you're getting real food. That is, like, it was green, it was harvested, there it is. Rather than in the middle where there's all this stuff with labels like you're mentioning where, you know, there are 20 ingredients. And Durie also says, don't eat things that your grandmother wouldn't know. I think that's pretty good advice, too. You know, if your grandmother would say, what the heck is that? That may be a good clue that's kind of removed from real food, you know. So anyway, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah. All right. Pat?
Thanks, Gary.
Yeah, thank you, Pat.
Thank you,
Priya,
Gary.
Priya is our special guest here.
Yes, Pat. Smriti is with us right now, and she's live on air. Smriti is a nutritionist and dietitian with nutritionrank.com. And Smriti, you can ask your questions to our expert, Danny.
Thank you, Priya. Thank you, Pat. Hello, Danny. It's enlightening hearing from you.
Yes.
And I loved your write-ups, and I can't wait to share them.
Good. This is a case where an expert is asking someone who may not be an expert. But anyway, go ahead.
No, anybody who knows food is an expert. There are so many things that you learn every single day.
Yeah.
And food changes every single day. So with all these processed products coming up, you really do not know. And I loved your quote on don't eat what your grandmother doesn't know. That's like fantastic. That sums it all up.
And, you know, and also, too, but at the same time, look at the evidence in terms of what the evidence suggests. For instance, the rate at which people develop myeloma is approximately the same in Great Britain and slightly less in Germany than it is in the United States. But in India, it's half what it is in the U.S., and in China, it's about a third. So this is, you know, you could say, well, the genetic stock of the people are different. But we're all human beings, and we share more genetic material than not. And so the very likely difference is that it has something to do with our diet. And, for instance, you know, so we need to, you know, take that into account, too, in terms of considering grandmother's advice, you know. I would say that's true.
Definitely. I mean, I think majorly it accounts for a low prevalence in India is because curcumin is a very integral part of Indian diet. And
yes,
we cannot cook food without it.
Good idea. And I you know, and people that say I'm not going to take curcumin, you know, I recommend to them, well, you know, please embrace Indian food. But because the curcumin has natural anti-inflammatory influences beyond even just its influence on myeloma. So, like, for instance, something just came out recently showing osteoarthritis was positively affected by it. So, you know, we can learn from this, and we can learn for instance, like, what might make the Chinese diet? Why is that better? Well, there's less meat eaten. But, you know, the studies we've done, the best study in the U.S. was done of some Connecticut women. But meat wasn't a big factor. But they did find that there are some differences in the Chinese diet. For instance, they don't have a lot of the dairy and butter products that we have in the Western diet. And, you know, so maybe we can learn some things from that, too. I think that,
right,
that might be the answer.
So I would love to know your thoughts on probiotics and prebiotics and diet and myeloma.
I think probiotics, especially yogurt, like I think that a lot of dairy products are probably, we should try to throttle back on them because they're quite prevalent in our diet. But yogurt's a case where I make a pretty important exception because it contains a lot of helpful probiotic properties, and that's particularly important for myeloma patients for other reasons. Because, for instance, because we often have infections and can end up with antibiotics, that plays havoc with our digestive system, and probiotics are very helpful for that. And then also, you're probably aware there's evidence that probiotics actually, for some reason, in human beings, appear to reduce stress. Now, we don't know exactly why that is, but, you know, kind of the scientist in me doesn't care. It just says, oh, okay, if there's an association, then people that are eating yogurt seem to be less stressed, then I want to be one of those people. So, you know, I think that so often something I'll have in the morning for breakfast would be I may have a simple cereal with some blueberries or raspberries with yogurt, with just a couple of dollops of yogurt, and that's a good way to start the day in terms of getting these probiotics, as well as terastilbein, which is in the blueberries, and elgeic acid, which is in the raspberries, and these things have demonstrated anti-myeloma properties. And then you get, you know, basically some good quality protein in your belly too from the yogurt. So I think, yeah, it's an important part of diet, and also too, and there's some French studies showing that having it is associated with appetite suppression and weight loss, and that's a chronic problem in the United States now, is obesity. And for myeloma patients, we know that body mass index is, you know, we know that that's a factor. We know that the fatter we are, the worse it is. You know, that sounds a crass way to put it, but it's true. So I think it's important to do what we can to control our weight. A yogurt may be an important part of that.
Well, Danny, hold on to that thought. It's Greedy. Thank you very much. We'll continue rotating here, and I have a long list of questions, email questions that listeners have submitted, and so I'm not going to ask a question per se, but I'm just going to go through a couple of these.
Okay.
Lorraine asked several questions that I think we've at least started to cover about, are there certain foods or herbs that she should be including in her diet? And then she asked, should I be taking certain vitamins or supplements? We seem to be getting to that a little bit already. Michael from the Netherlands. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I was just
quickly for her: basil, parsley, sage, rosemary. These are important for you. And then, in terms of vitamins, yes, vitamin D3 is, I think, very important for myeloma patients. And maybe a fish oil supplement if particularly if fish consumption is low. Go ahead, though.
No, no, awesome. Michael from the Netherlands wrote a rather long question. It was great to hear from him. But he touches on exercise at the end about after a light meal, the importance of going out for a long walk in the evening. And he writes, I assume that you believe it makes a difference, but is there any evidence? So you were talking about the obesity thing. I thought, well, that's a nice segue there. Is there any evidence that exercising helps?
As you know, we have an 8-part series on exercise and myeloma already on your blog. So please recommend to our friend in the Netherlands that maybe he can take a look at that. But the evidence is so overwhelming that Dr. Thomas Martin at University of California, San Francisco, where I was treated for my stem cell transplant, he said that it would be unconscionable not to recommend that myeloma patients seek increased ambulation, which is, this is a way of saying they need to walk. You know, we need to walk and move around. We need to exercise. So this is really an important thing, and absolutely. So he, you know, and I've written a lot on it, and I don't want to take too much time away from the diet topic, but no question, and there's lots of medical evidence that even if you're in the middle of a stem cell transplant, you know, the thought was, don't exercise. You've been hurt so badly, you should just rest. That turns out not to be true, and some research, interesting research done in Germany. But anyway, exercise is really important for myeloma patients, and so he's completely right in what he suspects.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Let's circle back around to Nancy. Nancy, another question for Danny.
Okay. I'm fortunate I went through all my treatments, and I haven't had any for a couple of years now, but I remember at the time I had all kinds of dietary issues and concerns, and you know, I had to deal with nausea from chemotherapy. I had to deal with food cravings due to having dexamethasone, and I had to deal with anemia a little bit, like just not clinical anemia, but just low red blood cell count and all these things. So at the time, I was trying to focus on what to eat, you know, to help me with the nausea, the food cravings, the low red blood cells. So that, you know, there's many people listening probably who are going through these things right now.
Right. Well, you know, stem cell transplant is difficult. Mine was. I won't paint it any other way. And the worst of it was, as you mentioned, the nausea. I mean, I've loved food all my life. I love to cook, and my mother taught me to enjoy food at an early age, and this was a absolutely shocking thing to learn after my stem cell transplant that I no longer liked food, and it went on for 2 or 3 months, and where I really didn't like food at first, it was just kind of really disgusting. And it sounds really terrible to say, but I would look at food that I normally would consider to be something good to eat, and I would say, that's disgusting. I can't eat that. And, you know, and then finally, when I was at the hospital, ward doctor came around one day, and, you know, he came to me and he whispered, he said, you know, Mr. Parker, if you don't start eating, they're not letting you out of here.
Yes.
I said, okay, bring apples. Bring apples and fruit. And it said, bring apples and fruit and some simple cereal like Raisin Bran. Bring me Raisin Bran, apples and fruit, and I was able to get that down. I could eat fruit. Now, this is a really personal matter, though, in terms of what you can like to eat after you've had a stem cell transplant, because the nausea is, for me, was so intense that it's very difficult. But I found that fruit and some cereals, those were kind of the best I could do. I would try other things at different times, but it just usually wouldn't work. And some of the things that I really recommend for you now, like broccoli or whatever, you know, if I could smell broccoli on the floor where I was in the hospital, it my stomach was turning. So you know, so things are quite different. But anyway, fruit worked for me. You know, you'd have to experiment what can work for you, and be patient. And the only thing that was good that I, other than, you know, what we were aiming for in the stem cell transplant was I lost a lot of weight. And I did say to the staff that that was a good thing. And my sister, who was my caregiver at home, she said, oh, this is not going to remain this way on my watch. So she was determined to get the weight back on me, which, you know, it did happen. But anyway, it's a challenge. It's really a challenge. But thank you for your question. I don't have any super answer, you know, in terms of, you know, what, there's no magic thing that I'm aware of.
No.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Let's rotate back to our favorite stand-up comedian from Orlando, Florida, Gary.
Actually, it's from Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh, okay.
But one thing, Danny, I was trying to get back online when you were talking about benefits of exercise. I went to Little Rock, and I don't know if you did as well.
I did.
You?
I didn't go to Little Rock, but.
Okay. Yeah. But when I did, they told me that every day I should get, you know, like as much exercise as I could during my stem cell transplant.
Yeah.
And so I tried as best I could.
Trying and doing.
You know. Yeah. Exactly. I did as much as I could. And but later on, I found there was an article that I found, you know, in my research, that showed that people who got 30 minutes of exercise a day had had cancer, had, I think it was a 50 or 60% better chance of a non-reoccurrence of that same disease, mm-hmm. which I thought was phenomenal.
Yeah, and there's in the stuff I've written for Pat, you know, there's a really great article that in the New York Times that basically showed that the people that are exercising live longer. I mean, the title of it, The Active Ones Live Longer. And if that doesn't get you motivated as a cancer patient, I'm not sure what will.
Yeah,
you know,
basically, exactly.
Your activity and food can be for activity. So you try to eat, you know, perhaps not really heavy meals so that you will want to go out on the walk, as our friend from the Netherlands suggested. You know, something like that's pretty important. And plus, for your mental outlook, I mean, this is a difficult disease. We know, you know, we're faced with our mortality. And oftentimes it's difficult within our families, and it's difficult for ourselves, for everybody. So, you know, getting out and walking some, and just getting outside and moving around, it feels good, and we'll feel better. And our mental outlook is important. In fact, there was an interesting study that was cited by Dr. Brian Dury, suggesting that reducing stress reducing stress was more important than diet. So this means that the question is, though, how do you stop if you're really worried? How do you stop from worrying? And that's a good question. But exercise.
Yeah, right. You know, how do you do that? You know, somebody tells you got 3 years to live. You know.
Right. So one
tough
thing to do is.
I think I'm happy.
Yeah, let's do something. That's my idea, and that's part of this is. Someone, you know, there are various people in this field who would say, well, the recommendations I'm making are nice, and it's nice that I've done all this work and so forth, but really it's just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic or so forth. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, these chairs look really good, and I think they'll make a difference. So
I think they will, especially, and maybe we wouldn't be in the position we're in if we would have done some of this stuff up front. You know, which is my daughter's position, who is kind of a health food nut, kind of a vegetarian, kind of a don't put anything that has a diphosphamide, anything on the label. If it doesn't say what the food is, you know, don't eat it.
I think we have to live, too, and you have to enjoy your food. I think that's really important. So that's why I'm not like a food Nazi or anything where I say, like, you know, you can't, thou shalt not eat ice cream. You should never have butter. You should not have coffee because it's got acrylamides. No, every once in a while, I'm going to have a little ice cream. I'm going to have coffee, and I like coffee. So
you savage.
I know, and but you know, our life is to live. It's not, you know, it's you know, I study statistics on diet and myeloma. That doesn't mean it's your life. You know, we eat food, and you should be enjoying your food, so you can enjoy your life. And I think that this is really a much more important issue. But that said, you know, probably we don't want to be eating a lot of the wrong things that are going to, you know, make us likely have more trouble. So, and then that brings me to another topic. I don't think it's in the questions, but I did want to get it out because I look at it as being a little controversial of late, and that is that alcohol consumption in repeated studies done by repeated investigators around the world, one after another, and a very recent one, a pooled study of almost 9,000 individuals, showed that alcohol consumption, at least in moderation, was inversely associated with the likelihood of developing myeloma. So I think a glass of red wine.
I saw that too.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. So and
I liked that study.
Yeah. Well, you know, some people that are teetotalers say, no, I hate that study. You know, I really don't like that information. That's got to be wrong. But it appears like that there is something to this. Now, this doesn't mean that you should decide, well, I'm going to go on a drinking binge because he said it was okay. No, I didn't say that was okay. I said
no.
Probably a glass or two of red wine, probably a good thing for you. In fact, the evidence suggests that it might be. Also, you get those healthy polyphenols in resveratrol in the red wine. So, and even Dr. Brian Dury is recommending this for a lot of patients. So I feel like that's
so this is how you justify it to yourself?
Yes, I'm going to have red wine tonight.
Okay, good.
Can I
ask my question?
It's Labor Day.
No, can I ask my question? I haven't asked my question yet.
Better go fast then.
Okay, I'm sorry. Danny, this was my question before we all got off on this bizarre tangent.
Yes.
Is some multiple myeloma patients have kidney involvement.
Yes.
For example, I was on dialysis, but now I'm not. But my kidneys are still compromised. And as you know, that many people do have, you know, kidney problems with multiple myeloma, with light change. So do you have any recommended sources of information that kidney-involved MM patients can go to? And frankly, because I had gone through it with my wife and my sister-in-law, and they darn near starved me to death. All I could eat was snickerdoodle cookies,
as
I recall.
Oh, yeah, that's a good diet. I mean, I looked at this seeing that you were interested in this topic because I don't really know that much about it, but it looked like that there were some things that I would normally recommend, like things that are high in phosphorus look like that they're not interested in you having a lot of that. And that, for instance, would forbid broccoli,
right,
which is really important for us otherwise.
Oh.
So, there is a lot of information on the Internet in terms of what to do. But what I would do is I would index those against what I recommend for diet and see what it looks like it's excluded. And it looked to me like you could still do most of the things that I was talking about. I don't know what your wife and daughter were trying to do to you.
Wife and sister-in-law. I think they were trying to collect insurance myself.
Okay, well, I'm not sure what they were trying to do, but it looks to me like that for a dialysis type of diet that a lot of the things that I'm recommending would be okay. Now, certain things, no. Like, for instance, broccoli, as I mentioned, that wouldn't be okay.
Mm.
But there is information already on the Internet on diets for that, and I would just look at cross-index them and see.
Oh, well, thanks.
Now, my wife works, is the office manager at a dialysis clinic, and I'm interested in it for obvious reasons, too. And I think, you know, speaking to one of their nutritionists, every one of these clinics has one, and, you know, I would compare, I would put their list of for food or foods that are okay on one side and the foods that would be good for myeloma patients to consume on the other, and just cross-reference, and I think somebody, it wouldn't take long. It would be nice to think that some of these staffers could help you with that, and hopefully they can, but I find sometimes they're sort of one-dimensional, but that's for another story.
Well, I lost 40 pounds on that diet, so it was good.
Great. I like the. I think they were just trying to collect the insurance crack. That's good. Maria, you had another question for Danny. Go ahead.
Yes. Okay, so I'm a clinical nutritionist, so I know sodium is important, but whenever I hear higher sodium levels, it like sends danger bells ringing all through. So I wanted to know your take on daily sodium intake for a myeloma patient, for both someone who has normal kidney function and compromised kidney function.
Yeah, I would say certainly with compromised kidney function, you would want to be paying close attention to that. And frankly, I think paying close attention to that anyway, just within your diet, my big recommendation there is that you'll have fewer problems if you're avoiding processed foods, because a lot of processed foods have salt being added. And this does make for more work in terms of food preparation for you, but you end up with more healthy food, and you end up with something where you can control the sodium level when you're dealing with foods that don't already have a lot of loaded sodium in them. So, I would say, yeah, this is certainly something to pay attention to, but I think a lot of that is affected by the fact that we eat so many processed foods, and then also awareness of what we're doing when we're eating. That is, how much salt is being used in the preparation of the food, and also some substitutes. For instance, if you're making, I found that I can cut the salt down that's recommended for making something by, if it's possible to add lime or lemon juice to the preparation, it actually, and the tongue, it actually increases your taste bud sensitivity to sodium, and you can decrease the sodium level in the cooking with a salad dressing or in something where something's being sauteed. You can use the lemon or lime to actually decrease the sodium level while preserving taste. So I'm always after things like that.
That's a great tip. Spriti, where are you
from?
You
so much. I'm from India.
So, yeah, I think in Indian cooking, a good amount of salt is used at times. And so, I think lemon would work quite well with a lot of preparations where this kind of food is being prepared. But you have to be careful with things like if you're making your own chutney, then that's one thing. But if you're buying a commercial chutney like Major Gray's or something, you have to watch what is the sodium level of that food. And so that would affect, exactly what you're going to end up with.
Thanks, Danny. Thanks a lot. Priya, did we have anyone listening in who wanted to ask a question live?
I'll just find out that. Listeners, if you have a question for our panel, you may please press 1 on your keypad, and we can bring you live on air to ask your question. I think most of them have actually sent in their questions, Pat. So maybe we could quickly go through the questions. We have around 8 minutes.
That's great.
We have a person online, Pat, who wants to ask a question. The person calling in from telephone number 415-531-6949. You may please ask your question. You're on air.
Sounds like someone from the Bay Area.
Thank you. I have a question about asparagine, which you mentioned in the context of asparagus not being good.
Yep.
And I understand that asparagine is found in meat and fish and some things that seem like they would be good for us to eat. So how do you... can you just say more about the problems with asparagine?
Well, asparagine levels in the other things is actually much, much lower than it is in asparagus. So I don't worry. If I look at the concentrations that exist in some other foods, I don't worry about those too much. But the concentration that's in asparagus is quite high, and so that's why I would be particularly concerned about that. This is also the reason the old joke about why urine has some strange smell after eating asparagus. It is caused by the asparagine. That's what's doing that. But most of the other foods that you're mentioning, I don't think in most cases the concentrations for the volume of what's contained in a typical serving would be such that you would be worried about that. But asparagus is a completely different picture. And unfortunately, this is true of all asparagus. For instance, they have in overseas, they have the white asparagus, and they make this marvelous soup in Germany called Spargel, and but I don't get to have it anymore because, again, it has the L-asparagine levels is pretty high in that stuff. So, but yeah, I don't worry too much about other foods because, given the concentrations, they're not that high.
Great, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Matt, I think
we
can
go on with these other questions for you.
Yes, please. Yes, we have. We have. We can just quickly maybe touch upon some of the important ones.
Of course. We haven't touched much on protein.
Danny,
there's
a question from Maria who
asks,
any input on high protein versus vegetarian diet with myeloma?
Oh, okay. For vegetarian diet, soy products are really important for you, and they contain, soy products actually contain anti-angiogenic compound called, if I'm pronouncing it right, genistein, this is really beneficial for us because it looks like that it's useful for not only providing a stable blood sugar, providing protein in the diet for a vegetarian diet, but also can be quite tasty. For instance, in the miso soup that I was talking about with Nancy, soy tofu being cubed into that soup is quite tasty. And then, for instance, this is just another illustration. Yesterday was, you know, a big cookout here at my house, and so people were going to have burgers and so forth, and I decided, well, I'm not, even though I like those and occasionally I might have a hamburger, I decided I would prepare a tempeh burger, and that's what I had. So I had a tempeh burger, and I had it with some, so it was, you know, tempeh is a tasty form of soy, and I had that with some sliced tomato and then big pieces of watercress on top rather than lettuce. So again, I got that, and then I actually, because I like it, I added some cranberries too to my burger, which is pretty unusual. So you wouldn't have to do that; it could be more classic. But that's a way that, for instance, you could get something that's considered to be typical American diet, but it seems like it, except that you're getting two helpful things: soy protein with genistein, which is helpful within the diet, as well as you're getting something else, like you could add radishes to, or something from the cruciferous vegetable family that's so helpful. And you know, and then for the our salad, a friend had brought over a shredded broccoli salad, which was quite tasty too. So it's possible also cheeses within a vegetarian diet. Vitamin K2, which we haven't talked about, looks to be helpful. And you can find vitamin K2 in Gouda cheese, Asiago, Parmesan, Emmentaler, and Jarlsberg. So those are other possibilities.
Boy, this hour has just flown by, everybody. Priya, we're going to have to do this again. What do you think?
Definitely, Pam, definitely. I think this has been absolutely a wonderful discussion, actually. And we have still questions that we need to be answered. I think one quick last question, Pat.
Great.
Last question from one of our listeners right now. She asks, what recommendations do you have for medications that cause acid reflux?
for medications with acid reflux that reduce acid
yes.
reflux. So this has been a problem for me when I was taking dexamethasone, and I think I ended up with Mylanta was what I was using because it was not causing constipation or what have you. But another thing that I find useful with acid reflux is actually mineral waters that are basic and so therefore tend to calm down stomach acid, and especially when I was in induction and taking dexamethasone, I always try to keep that around the house, like Perrier water or something like that, to help calm down my belly.
Thank you so much, Danny. I think this was an absolutely wonderful discussion. I thank Danny and all the panelists for being with us today, in spite of it being a holiday and Labor Day there in U.S. And I thank Smriti for joining us from India at this time. It's lonely 4:30 a.m. here. Thank you all the listeners for being with us on this holiday edition of Pure Panel Talk Show. Please, we look forward to having all of you join us for our next Pure Panel Talk Show that is scheduled for September 5th at 5 p.m. ET, and we are discussing yoga for midlife and beyond. And the expert on the show will be Dr. Larry Payne. Our monthly Myeloma panel discussion for the month of September is scheduled for 26th of September at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and the expert on the show is Dr. Ajay Chari of Mount Sinai Hospital. Please mail me, priya@trialex.com. We're registering for all the events. The broadcast link for today's show will be sent via email to all participants, and I will be sharing all of Danny's work and a summary that he has sent me with all the participants. For more details of upcoming shows, please visit trialex.com/curetalk. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much, Priya. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you
very
much.
Thank you.
Okay. Good night.
Yeah, good night, everyone.